We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
The following is a special presentation of the Mungadas St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Welcome to Sports and More with Mike Claiborne on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Our special guest tonight is a former teammate of Mike Shannon. He has done a lot of things in his baseball life, and it's always a pleasure to have Tim McCarver with us. And it's nice to have you here, sir, and thank you for spending a little time with us.
It's a pleasure. Always a pleasure to be on with Mike and you. Are you kidding?
Well, there have been people who didn't think that was the best idea, but, you know, in your case, we appreciate it. How long have you two guys been bumming around together?
1959 we met. And then the following year, actually the spring of 1960, and that's when we went to Nashville to play three games. We were playing with the double-A ball with the Memphis Chicks, and we went to Nashville and played three games and went to Memphis to find out the ballpark was burning down, and it did.
I've heard that story where they lost everything. There were no survivors.
That's correct. It was a dangerous fire, too, because it was amidst five hospitals, and the park was right in the middle. It was very, very dangerous.
See, they say it's one of the hottest fires ever in the whole state of Tennessee. In fact, it melted the fireproof windows 1,000 yards across the street.
They proved to be not fireproof.
Well, they were fireproof up to 1,000 yards, and then after that, it lost its luster a little bit.
Yeah.
What were those days like? Because you guys were very young when you got to the big leagues. And you obviously had a chance to play around a lot of veteran players, but what was it like being a young guy on the road in a big league environment and everybody's looking at you?
Well, there wasn't a big league environment in Memphis, anything but. Since the ballpark burned down, we played in a football field, we played in Columbus, Georgia, we played all over the place.
We had a great manager, though.
Yeah, Joe Schultz was our manager.
I mean, and we learned a lot from him.
We really did.
Always the good things, but
but you learn how to be a big leaguer.
Budweiser.
That's right. Well, we could tell you some stories that are unbelievable.
Well, if you want to tell a couple of them that we can get on the air, that'd be
some of them we can't tell on the air.
Yeah, pound that Budweiser might be as far as we want to go with that.
Guys like that, the lifers, a Joe Schultz, a George Kissel. They were invaluable, weren't they, as far as the things you learned from them growing
up? Learn is in capital letters, I'll tell you, with Kissel in particular. I know a lot of fans hear about George Kissel, and you hear about Eddie Stanky. These guys were the teachers in the Cardinal organization, and I learned an awful lot from them, from George and Stanky. I love Stanky. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of people who didn't like Eddie. And yet he was, I think, ahead of the farm system at the time from 61 to 64. Yeah. And he was, I remember having dinner next to him when we lost in 1968. And he had a scowl on his face when he asked me about the game, which I didn't really appreciate. But that was the part of Eddie Stanky that you took. You had to take that part of him. And some of that part wasn't too nice all the time.
Yeah, he was cut and dried many, many times.
There was no middle ground with him?
No, there was no middle ground.
No ground with him.
Well, you knew where you stood.
Oh, definitely. And everybody around him knew, too.
You mentioned 1968, and whenever I bring that up, I get a scowl out of you and Mike over here when you guys bring it up.
You're not going to get a lot of smiles, I'll tell you.
Hell no, I'm still mad about that.
That's a tough job, boy. You're up 3-1 with Gibson definitely pitching game 7. How we lost that, I'll never know. But
I know.
It happened.
It's because that manager didn't pinch it for the left-hand.
Mickey Lolich?
For Mickey Lolich.
Right. When they were behind.
That's right.
Now,
that was a
they were down three games to one.
Game 5.
Yeah. And if they weren't down 3-1, he'd have pinch hit for him.
Mm-hmm.
But
and he ended up dumping a single in front of Ron Davis in right field, who's playing instead of Roger Maris.
I never will forget the first game we played. Yeah, Roger went to the manager and he said, "Listen, I can't hit lowly." So, and anyway, the first
he
game
he did. Yeah. Very honest.
And first game, he put Davis out there and he got hit in the head with a fly ball. And he said, "Roger, get your glove and get the hell out of right field." And Roger said, "Oh God, I got to take an over forearm." But he knew, you know, Maris told me in July, you know, because everybody knew the Tigers are going to win and everybody knew we were going to win. And so Lolich was the other guy was winning 30 games.
Danny McLean.
McLean, yeah.
He said, "Oh, don't worry about McLean." He said, "The guy you got to worry about is Lolich." He knew.
He knew
right away. He did. He was one of the smartest players, I think, that we were ever.
We can't say enough about Roger Maris, I think, and enough good things have been said by Mike and me and everybody who came into contact with him. He was talk about the breaking Babe Ruth's record. That's one thing, but the way he could play the game and what he imparted, as an example, how he took a runner out at second base, going from first to third, things that even he taught a very good base running team. He taught us even more about base running.
You know, Timmy and I were so lucky, the people we had in the minor leagues, and he didn't even mention in the big leagues. When we got to the big leagues, we had Stan Musial, we had Dick Grote, we had Kenny Boyer.
Bill White.
Yeah, I mean, the list
Kurt
goes,
Flood.
The list goes on and on. Bobby Shantz, the list goes on.
Bobby
Shantz
and Kurt Simmons.
And Sawatsky. I mean, you probably knew more about Sawatsky than anyone.
I talked to Carl a lot about that, and I knew Hal Smith earlier. In fact, in 1961, Smitty had a heart attack, and I was called up from the minor leagues. And in order to be paid then, you had to be there were two guys that were influential in my life, Hal Smith, the catcher who had a heart attack in 1961, and George Crow, who was released that same year. And George, I think I've told you this, Mike, George became a roving batting instructor. And he was the guy who taught me how to hit against my front side. I'd never ever heard that before. And I was kind of his pupil in Charleston, West Virginia. And he really was the guy who started my career, because if I didn't learn how to hit against my front side, I wasn't going to make it.
Who taught you how to catch?
Hal Smith had a lot to do about it, how to call a game.
Mm-hmm.
And he came down with index cards in the minor leagues, and he watched us play and all that sort of stuff. And for the most part, I passed the grade as far as I had good training.
A lot of that, though, Timmy, is natural. You have to.
I paid attention to the pitchers that helped me, and the pitchers that helped me were guys like Gibson and Simmons and things like that. And you got to pay attention to stuff like that, as Mike said.
Let's take our first break. Tim McCarver is with us. We're at the ballpark on the Cardinals Radio Network.
This is a special presentation of the Mungadas St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Welcome back to Sports and More. Once again, Mike Claiborne on KMOX.
Welcome back, everyone. We continue. Mike Shannon, Tim McCarver is here. I want to touch on the minors again for a second. Where was the most fun you had in the minors? What city or what level of the minor leagues?
With Joe Schultz as our manager. He was our manager in 60, 61, and 62. Mike wasn't with the Atlanta Crackers originally. You were originally.
Yeah, and then they went to Seattle.
Then you went to Seattle, right.
Where Johnny Peskett played under him.
So he was a guy that made it fun on and off the field?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You love playing for Joe. That's all I can say.
I'll get it out of you doing a commercial here.
We won the Little World Series in 1962 against Louisville. As a matter of fact, it lasted until the Major League season started with the World Series. That's it. We had rain out after rain out after rain out. We played a doubleheader to beat Louisville to win the Little World Series. Nobody cares about things like that, but we did. And they had fired Joe Schultz. And after he won the Little World Series, we loved him. All the players loved him. They hired Bing Devine, hired him as a third base coach for the Cardinals. So,
you know, when you look back on those fun times and the learning process that you went through, what have you carried with you since then? I mean, we talk about what George Kissel would say, but there are other things that you can learn from people in the game that you carry through life to apply in other elements. Is there anything in particular that you've taken away from what somebody gave you from an advice standpoint?
Well, as far as base running is concerned, Dick Groat, I don't think there was a better base runner and a slower base runner than Dick Groat. And he proved to me and to all of us that you don't have to be fast to be a good base runner.
What was fun about him was that he was such a good hit-and-run man. In fact, to the point where he would put the hit and run on with a guy at third base in less than 2 outs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was like a
first and third type.
Yeah, like the suicide squeeze, you know. Mm-hmm. He'd start the runner from third.
Himself.
But that's how confident he was in handling the bat.
And the fun we had when we were learning all this stuff. I mean, I know Mike had interviewed Willie McCovey a couple of times, I think, during rain delays. And Willie McCovey used to kid me all the time about how small my bat was. It was 31 ounces. And he'd said, Tim, I pick my teeth with bats that small.
He wasn't kidding either.
He wasn't kidding. And one day I came out in Candlestick, and he had my bat in his mouth.
I tell you, Timmy,
that was funny.
Timmy, I never will forget. We used to pitch him. We used to throw him fastballs high, and he'd swing at him.
And fierce slow ball hitter.
Mm-hmm. And then just go up the ladder. Well, I was playing in the outfield at the time and threw him a fastball high, and he didn't swing. And then they threw him another one. He didn't swing again. I said, oh, damn, we're in trouble now. And, boy, he'd wear you out.
Yeah, down. I remember Bob Perkey came to the team in 1965. And we were going over the hitters before the game. And Aaron, of course, was hitting for Milwaukee. So we're going over the Milwaukee Braves. And Perkey was a starting pitcher that night. And he said, you know what I've really had a lot of luck with Aaron doing? Throwing him hanging breaking balls.
Yeah, slop sliders.
And up Boyer in. Said, not with me playing third, you're not. That ain't going to happen. And it didn't. He threw hanging sliders to other hitters, Henry Aaron.
Tell him about the night he jumped out of the batter's box to hit the home run.
It was his first one, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, he got called out on the first one.
Yeah.
He flied out to right field. But the second one, he hit on the roof and he opened the
That's right. 1965.
Pelakutis, right?
Chris Pelakutis was the home plate umpire, and he had made an out. He ran up about 5 feet in front of home plate to hit Kurt Simmons' curveball. And Chris said, you know, Tim, I would have had to have called him out. And Maxie dropped the ball. It was a kind of a weak pop fly, to, mm-hmm. if you want to call it that. Didn't go 10 feet in the air. And, you know, you didn't get those swings out of Aaron. And so he had one more plate appearance. Joe Torre was on deck. And I say that because Torre was run, Aaron was run, and Bobby Bregan was run. Yeah. He hit a home run and was out of the batter's box.
And he knew it, too. He came around first base, and he looked back. He knew he was going to be out.
Yeah, and he was.
He didn't care. He said, I just want to hit one off that
just
sucker.
Just think, it would have been 556 instead of 755.
What about for you being a catcher, and umpires were as colorful as some of the players there, who were some of the better discussions you would have?
Al Barlick was one. He ended up going to Japan with us in 1968. As a matter of fact, he was the poorest poker player. We just drained him.
I mean, that's a long flight.
We had some guys who could play poker now, let me tell you. Believe me. But Al Barlick was one. Chris Pelakutis was another.
The old guy, what was his name? He's in the Hall of Fame.
Little
guy.
Oh,
you know who I'm talking about.
Yes.
I remember.
The Lord.
Doug Harvey.
Doug Harvey. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Come up with his name by saying the Lord. And,
That was Whitey's name for him because we were in New York, and he put the tarp on, and it wasn't raining. And Whitey went out and said, "What the heck is going on there?" He said, "Oh, it's going to rain." He said, "Oh, it is, huh?" But there were a lot of umpires. You could talk to the umpires then.
Yeah.
I remember one umpire. we were in Atlanta, and Euchre was catching. Him alone, he could come up with some stuff. But anyway, this umpire called a pitch on the outside. It was about a good 3 or 4 inches outside. He called it a strike. And I said, "That wasn't a strike." And he said, he pulled his mask off. He said, "I said that was a strike." I said, "Well, who are you?" And he said, "I'm God." I said, "Well, good, make it rain. I'm 0-2.
That was Doug Harvey.
Hey, you mentioned Euchre. What sort of treat was he to be as far as a teammate was concerned?
Funniest man any of us had ever met. I roomed with him at the time. We paid $12 a night for the two of us, $24 a day to stay at the Bel Air East on Lindell. And it was a funny thing about Euchre that I understand is endemic about a lot of comedians. When you were with him alone, he wasn't funny. But the minute he stepped out of the room, it was one laugh. He needed an audience. Mm-hmm. And evidently, I wasn't a good enough audience for you, but I am now. I mean, funniest man I've ever met.
So when you guys were the skylarking in the room at night, he wasn't as creative.
Not necessarily.
The bus, so he had a big audience on the bus.
Oh, gosh.
Was that something you look forward to, being on a bus ride with him?
Absolutely.
Get a good seat near.
It didn't matter whether we won or lost. Either.
How long would that take if you lost a game for him to get it wound up?
He would time it.
Two drinks.
A couple of beers. Yeah, he would time it. Phenomenal wit, which he's proven to be.
And of course, you had to have a good manager to understand a guy like that and his role compared to somebody who turned around and didn't want to hear any of that after
losing. Well, in 1964, Yogi Berra got all over Phil Lentz for playing the harmonica after they had lost a game. Well, there was no way Red was ever going to say anything to Bob Euchre.
Well, he did say one thing to him after a trip we had from Pittsburgh from the airport to the hotel. He said, "You know," he said, "the general manager was listening to all that. He was mocking the general manager. He got traded."
That's right. Red told him this had to be 5-6 years ago. Euchre did not know that Johnny King would not play him in the '64 World Series because of the tuba.
Yeah, that's what Euchre holds to.
He was mad about
that
too.
But you know, and Gibson chimed in too. Bob was a hilarious, still is. Funny.
I think he's funnier now than when we knew him. Yeah.
And one time we used to love it when Bob would stand with the roster and write down on the blackboard all of the guys that he was getting rid of.
Yeah, on his team.
Lou Brock, you're Stan. Gibson, 45, I'm Stan. The rest of you guys are in real trouble. And sure enough, Bob is talking about everybody, and he traded everybody except him and Lou.
He didn't get one guy traded, though. Gilson.
Well, Bing Devine was there in the room. He had snuck into the room after, and Bob turned around and saw Bing, and he said, "Bing, don't worry about it. You're gone, too." He was the general manager. Nobody had the guts to say anything like that to Bing Devine, but Bob did, of course.
Oh, do we need to take another break? Let's take one. We're having a good time. Tim McCarver's here. Mike Shan is here on the Cardinals Radio Network.
This is a special presentation of the Mungadas St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Welcome back to Sports and More. Once again, Mike Claiborne on KMOX.
We continue. Tim McCarver, Mike Shan, and Mike Claiborne. Bob Gibson, who is a treasure. You know him. I think you two together probably are the two best friends or best teammates he's ever had. What's the one thing about Gibson that we don't know? We know he's a competitor. We know he's a tough guy. We know he's a great teammate when it came to protecting his teammates. But what's the one thing about him? Maybe it's the fact that he's funnier than we ever knew him to be.
Yeah, Yeah, he had humor beyond baseball, and he could figure things out very well. You never pull the wool over Bob Gibson's eyes unless you came. You showed up with a snake. I've never had a man that was more afraid of snakes than Bob Gibson, and he tells a story about being in a bar in St. Petersburg with Ted Savage, and somebody had a rubber snake, and he and Ted Savage almost ran all the way back to the outrigger inn where we were staying, which was about 4 miles away. It's the funniest, but he didn't like snakes, still doesn't.
Mike, what do you remember about him?
His intelligence, how intelligent he was, on and off the field.
He was more than just a baseball guy. He was just more than a pitcher. Yeah. He was
very intelligent
guy.
Off the field, but on the field too, he was very intelligent. You know,
graduated from Creighton. That's a really good school.
And take the heavy load that he was taking, and playing basketball.
Mm-hmm. You know what's interesting? His baseball coach at Creighton was Bill Fitch, who at one point was the all-time winningest coach in the NBA.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, he was a basketball coach. He coached for a number of different teams, but that was his baseball coach at Creighton. You know, then the baseball coach might have been doing something else as far as – because they didn't pay you a lot to coach then. So you might have been the basketball coach or something else, but mm-hmm. you had more than one job, and that was his coach.
I had a television show for as far back as 2001, and I was interviewing Paul Heinsohn. And he said, you know, I played against your buddy. I said, well, I thought he was talking about baseball. Mm-hmm. I said, played baseball against? When? He said, no, Bob Gibson. I played against him when I was at Holy Cross, and he was with Creighton. And we both scored 30 points. Mm. And I got back to Bob. And that was, you know, he said, oh, yeah. He said, and we talked 30 minutes about how Creighton used to come up and play all the Jesuit schools mm-hmm. in the Northeast, which was
had some really good men. Dick Groat was All-American.
Yeah. All-American at Duke.
At Duke.
Yeah.
Correct, yeah.
Played for the Fort Wayne.
He just got fired from doing a radio job a couple of years ago.
recently.
Yeah, last year.
University of Pittsburgh. Yeah.
You know, when you talk about guys like that, good athletes in Bob Gibson. Who were some of the other great athletes that you had a chance to encounter? Because that was an era where you played more than one sport in a lot of cases.
Kurt Flood couldn't throw, but that's about the only thing he couldn't do. He was a terrific athlete.
Concentrate. I thought that he could concentrate any situation better than anybody I've ever seen.
I think Juan Marichal said that. Said it was the toughest out that he had ever faced. Of course, he had.
What did he know?
Yeah, what did he know? What did Willie Mays know? Yeah, right. We still visit with Willie when we're out in Oracle Park. He is magnificent.
Best player you ever saw?
Willie, to me. He could do everything.
Hands down.
The one thing you couldn't do with Willie is tag him. To get him out at a base.
Well, what he would do, he would show the front foot, and then he'd pull it back and kick you with the other foot to try to dislodge.
And there
the
was
ball.
Nobody who took more pride in his. I remember Ray Sadecki was traded for Orlando Cepeda in 1966, and they were in. I was going out to eat with Ray. We were roommates for a long time, became very good friends. He was in my wedding and all that, and. Willie was in the bullpen. He was like had a tweaked little injury in his wrist or something like that. And something happened with a Cardinal runner that was on second base playing at Candlestick where he went back head first. And Willie just happened to mention Ray. He said, if that was me, I wouldn't have gone back hands first. I'll guarantee you that. He took an awful lot of pride in his base running. And it would be interesting to see how many times Willie Mays was called out.
Yeah. Did you ever
at a base?
Did you ever see
with a tag? I would say right now, none, ever.
Did you ever see him leave his feet in the outfield?
No.
Never left. No. Had maybe
never dove for a ball
ever.
You know.
May have had the greatest balance.
On his uniform.
Yeah. No. Never well, from base running.
Right.
Maybe had the greatest balance of anybody ever.
It's just, I mean, extraordinary. You can't be any better than that.
Speaking of base running or grass stains, Mike and I were talking about the ghost.
Javier
last week. Mm-hmm. And how hard he was to get to at second base. You had a good look at him.
The Phantom, we call him.
Yeah, nobody ever got near him on a double play ball.
No. They didn't.
The great story was with Duke Snyder, and he was said, "I'll get him." And he came back in, and he had a chance to get him, and all the players said, hey, what happened? And he turned to him, and he said, he had grass stains on his uniform.
Well, in those days, you went out of your way to get a shortstop or second baseman.
Did they go out of their way to get catchers, too?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was a pretty risky position at that point.
You'd love to see that guy get the ball come the same time you did. You would smoke him.
Yeah, it was a little rough on the plate.
Do you recall any of those collisions, anybody who you knew you had to pay attention to?
Bob Watson was one tough slider.
Big guy, too.
Big guy. He wasn't as fast as some of the other guys. So
that made it even worse because he was getting there at the same time the ball was.
And Lou Brock. Let me tell you, Lou weighed about 145 pounds, maybe. And when he hit you, I mean, he broke the clock. He didn't just clock you. I mean, he broke the clock.
He didn't have an ounce of fat on his body.
An ounce.
So lean and muscular.
Yeah.
And the thing I always appreciated about him, he didn't use the hand first slide. He'd have that pop-up slide. So if you were leaning in, you might catch a shoulder to the chin. And that way, a lot of infielders really refrain from getting near him as far as those tags at the bases.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you talk about going into a base that was, whether it was occupied or not, a guy that really went in hard. And we had a tough ball club. You know, we didn't have guys who laid out of games with them. There were exceptions, but I just whispered to Mike, one guy who was an exception. I can't.
We so don't want to.
Family or friends may still be. Yeah. And that's why you're a good teammate.
Well,
you don't want to throw a guy
on
the bus.
I would never mention that. The one guy.
Mention what you think about the Hall of Fame. Now, you're in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I'm in the Hall of Fame, but I'm not, you know, I'm in the broadcaster's wing of the Hall of Fame. I feel it almost sacrilegious to sign an autograph of mine and put HOF behind it because I'm not in the Hall of Fame.
It's because you were a player.
Because I was a player, yeah.
Right.
I feel very sensitive about that, so I don't do it. I put Ford Frick, and, you know, it was, but I'm very particular about that.
Well, what was that like for you in your life when you got that call to be part of the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Pretty nice.
You remember the moment?
I knew I wasn't going to make it in the other one. You know, so if I didn't get in this one, I wasn't going to get in.
What was that moment like? Where were you at when it took place?
Well, I had a pretty good idea from Gargiola, who told me, he said, most of the guys that I've talked to are going to vote for you in the top 10. And I thanked him and then called the other guys and thanked them. And so I had a pretty good idea but believe me, it wasn't anticlimactic.
And for you to make that transition from player to broadcaster, who helped you most make that transition? Because you've worked with a number of people in your career, both as player and also as a broadcaster.
I think the original broadcasting crew with the Phillies in 1980, I had no training whatsoever. I mean, there was no training. I'm sure Mike didn't have any either. None of us did. It was kind of observe, figure it out, and go for it. And realize
baseball played a big part too because you learned how to learn.
Yeah.
You know, that's what school's
well put.
Yeah, that's what school's all about, you know. But if you pay attention, you don't have to go to school. You just read books or listen to people.
Listen
and observe
and put your ego aside. And I was among a group of with Harry Callis, Andy Musser, Richie Ashburn, who's next to Euchre's pretty You know, he was a funny, funny man.
Very, very low-key and very
different
dry.
Different from Uke in many ways. But Chris Wheeler also was, to this day, one of my closest friends. But I learned a lot from those guys, and I learned the technical part of the business. And then I went to New York a couple of years later and worked with Ralph Kiner, who referred to me as Ted, Jim, MacArthur, McCarthy. Which, and I'll leave you with this, if I may. A guy comes, Ralph Kiner and I've told Mike this story. Ralph Kiner and I are doing our work in the booth, and a guy comes in, and we've all had this experience that you want to find out the guy's name, but you don't want to say, you don't want to ask him who he is. So he stands there, and he stands there, and you're shaking your head like a big phony. And so the guy leaves, and I said, darn, I hate when that happens. And now Ralph has called me. He called me no name. There was no name for me. Hello, everybody. I'm Ralph Kiner, along with. And he looked at me, and he finally said, what is your name? And we were live. We weren't taping this. What is your name? So with that in mind, I said, no, Ralph. He said, you know what I do in situations like that? I just say, there he is. I said, no, Ralph, that's not going to get it. And, you know, we've all been subjected to that. Well, the next night, I come in the booth, and I always beat Ralph into the booth, but he had commercials to do that afternoon. And Ralph looked up at me coming down the steps of Old Shea Stadium, and he said, there he is. He had forgotten my name from the night before. So every time I hear the words, there he is.
You paid attention.
That's Ralph Kiner.
Let's take another break. We'll come back with Tim McCarver and Mike Shannon at the ballpark on the Cardinals Radio Network.
We are the voice of Cardinal Nation, America's sports voice, KMOX. This is a special presentation of the Mungadas St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line. Welcome back to Sports and More. Once again, Mike Claiborne on KMOX.
Final segment with Tim McCarver, along with Mike Shannon. I'm Mike Claiborne, and we're having a good old time. You've been doing this a long, long time, and I know people look at the game today and they ask themselves the question, this isn't what I'm used to seeing. I want to ask you what's wrong with the game. What do you like about the game?
I like the athletes that are playing the game, but I'm not too sure they're given the opportunity to play the game athletically like people want to see them play. I hope that's clear, because I think some of these guys, that like base running, has been stymied in the game today. I think that's a legitimate criticism. I think the athletes are better than, gosh, we ever were. They're bigger, they're taller, they're stronger. The height of the players is what surprises me. They continue to be taller and taller and bigger and bigger. And I would like to see some of that athletic prowess performed on the field instead of being criticized in a booth. But they are awfully good. I mean, much better than we were, I think.
Well, they have more. They have dietitians. They have weights. I mean, we didn't have any of that stuff. They have medical attention that's way superior than what we had. Mm-hmm. And that's not to knock the doctors that we had, because we had great doctors, the best doctors that were. But
weightlifting was discouraged as an example.
That is correct.
For us, and Steve Carlton poo-pooed that. I mean, he said... he had been reading Eastern teachings since he was a kid. And when he got to be a pitcher for the St. Louis Cardinals, he took some of that to effect and became one of the early guys to lift weights. He still does, and he's 74 years old.
One of the strongest players you've ever been around?
Strongest man from fingertips to elbow that I've ever met.
Including Richie Allen?
Including anybody you want to name.
Wow. That's saying something. Richie Allen, we talk about him from time to time, as strong as anybody in his era, including Carlton.
What a player. Yeah. Great guy, too.
Hall of Famer? He's right there on the cusp.
I think so. I think he'll go in the Hall of Fame in the next couple of years. He missed by a vote.
One vote the last time.
3 years ago.
I remember the night the three of us were having refreshment in Washington, and Mike, we start talking about Richie Allen, and Mike said to you, "Hey, Mike, you remember how good Timmy? You remember how good Richie Allen was with us?" And you said, "Mike, I was traded for him."
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I was with Curt Flood,
mm-hmm.
and it turned out to be an infamous trade for Curt. Think of the courage that it took to make that move, and that's why. And it's a nice note to end this, or near it. That's why Curt Flood should be in the Hall of Fame along with Marvin Miller. Curt Flood did so much for the players, as did Marvin Miller. But the powers that be are still thinking that they don't want either one of them in the Hall of Fame, and I doubt that they'll make it.
You know, even with the senior committee or however that's structured, you think maybe those guys, and even though that group is getting older, they don't really understand the impact that those two had.
Yeah, there's too much bad blood among them, and they've made it personal, the powers that be, I think.
If you'll look at the committee, there's two or three on that committee that as long as they're there, it'll never happen.
That's unfortunate because, as you mentioned, the impact he's had on the game is
something. Both of them.
Yeah. And I guess one of the things is a little frustrating. I'm not sure with as much technology that's available that players don't have a chance to just Google a Curt Flood or Marvin Miller just to read about the impact that they had.
Well, I think more players are learning about Curt in particular.
Yeah, Curt, but I don't think Marvin.
Mm-mm. No.
You ask any player today, who's Marvin Miller? Oh,
yeah, they don't.
Double A guy? Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Was he a left-hander? Catcher? Yeah. what's he play?
Exactly.
I mean, Curt Flood gave up making $110,000 a year. Then he had a 3-year contract with the Phillies. I happen to know that because I was in the next boat at a lower level. Mm-hmm. But. So he gave up a contract over a 3-year period for $330,000. That was a fortune in those days. So he gave up a lot.
He gave up more than just the money.
He sure did.
That's a great point. We're out of time. Tim, this is always a treat to have you visit. We thank you for the time.
And I loved it, Michael. Thank you.
For Tim McCarver and Mike Shannon, I'm Mike Claiborne. We thank you for listening.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.